hold on one second while I get my friends all laid out. So typically I come with a little liquid courage.
You didn't tell me that was back there.
So two more. So the great thing is I don't go home with any product. You guys get the product. So follow along, ask any questions you'd like to, and at the end, ask a good question, and I'll hand you out to whatever mini you would like. So getting ready first, thank you for the opportunity to come and speak to you today. Thank you to Jen and the Kentucky Corn Growers Association for thinking of me and the invitation. Thank you, Martin. So get ready. I have probably 40 or so slides, so bear with me. They're fun, some of them are, and some of them are very technical, so we'll give you a deep dive into the history and Kentucky bourbon all together. So, I have it. Never mind. I got it. Okay. So the Kentucky Distillers Association, we also own the trademarks for the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, the Kentucky Bourbon Trail Craft Tour, and the Kentucky Bourbon Affair, which is a brand new event we just started this year. We just accomplished it. It was a five-day event. We held 48 events in 5 days here in Louisville and at the distilleries. So the month of May was a little busy for us. All right, so background about the KDA. We were founded in 1880 right here in Louisville. Our headquarters are in Frankfort, and our mission is to promote, protect, and represent Kentucky's signature bourbon and distilled spirits industry. You'll note that we don't just represent bourbon, we represent all distilled spirits. So a lot of our distilleries do make things other than just bourbon. The KDA now has 20 member companies. It's our largest that we've had since 1982. We have four different levels of membership at the KDA. The first is our heritage members, so our big guys. The first one is Beam Inc. That should now read Beam Suntory Inc., which got purchased recently. They went from a publicly held traded company to a privately held company. Brown-Forman, Diageo North America, Four Roses, Heaven Hill, and Wild Turkey. In 2011, we created a new type of membership called the craft member. As you guys are probably aware, the craft industry continues to grow just like the microbrewery industry has continued to grow. So we have now quite a bit of craft distilleries in our membership that go right across the state. Back in 2012, we created a new membership called an educational member, and they're the Distilled Spirits Epicenter. So quarterly, they put on classes at Moonshine University, which is only a couple of miles from here in downtown Louisville. But Moonshine University and the Distilled Spirits Epicenter is here pretty much as an educational class, an educational facility. So they do these week-long courses for people all across the country that come in and want to learn how to distill. And then a proof member. The proof member is Michter's, which is located here in Louisville. So they're in between the heritage members. They're bigger than a craft member, but not yet a heritage member. So they're kind of an in-between point. So a little bit of what is bourbon. So not many of you are Kentuckians, I assume. So we'll do the history of what is bourbon real quick here. The first one you guys should be very proud of. It must be at least 51% corn. Most of the mash bills going into bourbon are right around probably the 70% mark is corn, and the rest of the other grains that they're using are malted barley, rye, and wheat. Must be aged at no more than 125 proof inside new charred oak barrels. So we're keeping the timber industry going pretty well because every barrel of bourbon that we use is a new charred oak barrel. It must be aged at least 2 years to be called straight bourbon. If it's been aged less than 2 years, the age must be on the bottle. It can't be bottled at less than 80 proof. Nothing can be added to enhance the color or flavor except pure water. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of Congress declaring bourbon a distinct native spirit. So it's our only native spirit. So that means anyone in the country can make bourbon. We say that, obviously, if you want to make good bourbon and sell good bourbon, you need to make it here in Kentucky. But you can make it anywhere in the country. So Texas has their own bourbon, Oregon, New York. It can be anywhere in the United States, nowhere outside the United States. So why Kentucky? Why has bourbon grown up here? Why do we make the best bourbon in the world? We have the great mixture of climate and natural conditions. So, of course, the water, the same reason we have great horses is the reason we have great bourbon. It's limestone water. We have the four distinct seasons. We age our bourbon in these barrels in rickhouses. And so as the four seasons change, the bourbon goes in and out of a barrel. So it contracts and expands depending on the season. And, of course, we have corn, plenty of our native grain. Just a little bit of history here. The early farmers, of course, they had problems getting their corn to market, so of course they changed it and made it into bourbon and made it into corn whiskey. Practical way to transport it and, of course, to sell their crop. The history of why it's called bourbon. Kentucky originally was three counties, one of them being Bourbon County, named after the French family. And so it was named after bourbon. And so Bourbon County was put on the barrels. And as it went down the Ohio and then the Mississippi River and got to New Orleans, they kept asking for good whiskey from Bourbon County. So they started calling it bourbon whiskey. And so the first known advertisement for bourbon was in 1821. So the next couple slides are kind of our fun picture slides of kind of different events we've been doing as an association throughout the couple of years. The top left-hand corner is us. We did a huge reception at the inaugural ball in D.C. when the president was inaugurated for the second time for the Kentucky Society. We've opened up down the Evan Williams Bourbon Experience is literally about five blocks down the street, if anyone's interested. It's our first distillery here in downtown Louisville. Another picture there in the bottom right is a meeting we had with Senator McConnell, talking to him a lot about our various federal issues that we do have going on. The top right photo, I was telling someone over earlier about the our friends in the scotch industry. We typically like to go to various conferences and different events and try to convert our confused scotch drinkers into bourbon drinkers. So there's a couple of tents. This one in the top right, we have gotten them, they have Kentucky Bourbon Trail t-shirts on. So we have, as we call it, convert the skirt. So the kilts have been drinking lots of bourbon. The bottom right, I was with the governor a couple weeks ago on an export mission to London. And so we had this really cool experience in the Winston Churchill War Rooms. We had lunch down there. And the lady in the picture is actually Winston Churchill's granddaughter, which was really cool. But we've done a couple of different export missions with the governor to try to help expand Kentucky bourbon across the world. Top left is mayor here in Louisville, Mayor Greg Fisher. We've gotten to the business of betting bourbon for every sporting event there is. This is the mayor last year. Louisville's both their women's and men's basketball team made it to the Final Four, so that's him betting a trunk of bourbon to his counterpart. And then another one, Forecastle is the Kentucky Bourbon Lodge. We'll do a lot of various music festivals here across the state that we get involved in as well. The one we're talking about, the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, the class, that's Moonshine University. So we do a little bit of education with that component. And then just different cooking with bourbon, different events. The door is a speakeasy event. We had a special password to get in for a speakeasy event that we did. And one thing that we really want to talk about more and more about Kentucky bourbon, it's more than just a drink. We consider it a lifestyle. So these are various events we've been working on. We'll do a lot of culinary events with various things. The picture in the top corner there with the L81 bottle in the sky there, we did a polo event down here on Waterfront Park. So on a Sunday morning, we did brunch, polo, and bourbon. What can go wrong there on a Sunday morning? And thank goodness the weather cooperated with us that day. So we talked about that Kentucky produces 95% of the world's bourbon. The governor likes to always say, we produce 95% of the world's bourbon, the other five is counterfeit, is his joke that he always goes with. But so production has increased more than 120% since 1999. Production topped the 1 million barrel mark for the first time since 1973. We believe what's created this bourbon revolution that we're talking about here in the last decade is due to the small batch and single barrel bourbons. So your Woodford Reserves, your Maker's Marks, but the Wild Turkeys are no longer just making the Wild Turkey 101. They're making the Russell's Reserve single barrel or Four Roses single barrel and small batch. So these smaller niche types of bourbons where the price level is a little bit higher, but people are driving towards those. So they're not just drinking Jim Beam White anymore. They're more advanced and drinking the Knob Creeks of the world. So we have 5.4 million barrels of bourbon that are aging. It's the biggest inventory since 1977. The last one I really love to talk about. The projected tax assessed value of aging barrels is $1.8 billion. So that increased $133 million since 2012, and that number is going to continue to grow. So we have more barrels of bourbon in Kentucky than we do people and horses. Your barrel will be waiting for you at the airport. but yeah, we have a lot of barrels aging across the Commonwealth. So when we talk about what does bourbon mean to Kentucky and what does bourbon mean to the Commonwealth of Kentucky, we have an economic impact survey that we've done, and so this is kind of our general big stats we use. So we're a $2 billion industry. We're responsible for 9,000 direct and spinoff jobs with an annual payroll of $415 million. We've had a 4% growth in the past year. We have one of the highest state's spinoff factors at 3.19. Only three of 244 manufacturing industries in Kentucky have more jobs and a higher spinoff factor. Of course, that's automobiles. We have a few production facilities. We make a few cars here in the Commonwealth. One other fact, too, to know is nearly half of the U.S. distilling jobs are here in Kentucky. So when we talk about distilling jobs, we're talking the majority of the man and labor that we're doing is bottling, is where the majority of that is. So a lot of the facilities have large bottling facilities. They're not very cool to go and visit a bottling facility. A lot of moving parts going on, but a lot of the jobs that we have here in Kentucky is distilling, is the bottling component of it. Taxes. We pay a lot of taxes in the state of Kentucky. It's ridiculous. That's where I come in and to try to help lower those taxes. So we pay seven different taxes on a bottle of spirits in Kentucky, which is why when you buy a bottle here in Kentucky, it may be a little bit higher than it will be in your home state. Again, we're working on that one. So just to go through the quick seven different ones that we pay, we'd pay an aging barrel tax. So just like you pay a property tax on your home, we pay a property tax on every barrel of bourbon that ages in the state of Kentucky. So those 4.9 million barrels of bourbon I talked about, we pay a property tax on those every year, and they age a long time. This Knob Creek aged 9 years. We pay taxes on that every single year. Then we pay the local rate, we pay the state rate. We pay a case tax at 5 cents a case. The state wants their state excise tax at $1.92. The feds come in and want $13.50 in excise tax, a proof gallon. The state came back and increased the state wholesale tax from 9% to 11% in 2005. And then, of course, the state needed some more money in 2009, so our Kentucky General Assembly added a state sales tax on all package sales at 6%. So that adds up to 60% of every bottle of spirits. Ouch. All right, good news. So we've been working on a solution for those first two taxes I talked about, the aging barrels of bourbon. So we proposed a tax credit. I won't get into too many of the details. Pretty much we wanted to make sure that we wanted a tax credit for the barrels of bourbon that were aging. We didn't want to get rid of the tax because it all went to our schools, just like your property tax and your homeowners goes to your local school system. We did not want to get rid of that tax to our local schools. We mean a lot to those local school systems where these barrels of bourbon are aging. So we wanted a tax credit, and obviously we wanted to reinvest that back in our facility. So it's the bourbon barrel tax credit. Good news. It passed, finally. after 5 years, we passed this in the Kentucky General Assembly this year. On March 15th, it was a very good year. That's us with the governor and the Senate president and a couple other key legislators and all of my distilleries that are there. On the federal level, there are some other issues that we're working on. The aged distilled Spirits Competitive Act. The entire Kentucky delegation is on board as co-sponsors of this bill. Pretty much it's a capitalized interest issue that we're dealing with. Again, it's about aging of the spirits. We're having to pay taxes on these spirits as they age, and we're not able to get any return on that. Exports. Export is a big issue for us. Good news, 95% of the world's consumers live outside of the United States. So we're looking for those 95% of those consumers that are out there and trying to get as much bourbon as we can to them. We exported $1.5 billion in distilled spirits last year. Bourbon and Tennessee whiskey topped that for $1 billion. The U.S. Commerce Department, for some reason, still combines us and Tennessee whiskey together. We keep trying to tell them that we're two completely separate things. They don't listen. But we're kind of together in that one. Our spirits exports have grown 99% since 2009. We exported to 126 countries. The top emerging markets, these are some interesting facts and figures, but so top emerging markets where it's booming: Spain, Israel, Latvia, Panama, South Africa, Chile, Bahamas, and the Netherlands. So those are based on percentage growth. So different, obviously, different parts of the world, different demographics, different flavors, different profiles, but continues to grow. One thing we talk about exports we need to encourage is more free trade agreements. You guys are probably big opponents of free trade agreements. Free trade agreements are huge. We saw when CORIS was passed in 2012, our our exports increased 73% to that country. So there's two other trade agreements that are in the works right now that we hope that will get passed, one with the EU and then one with, I believe it's now at 14 different Pacific countries that we're looking to get passed that will help increase exports to those regions. Investment. So as we continue to grow and as we continue to export more bourbon, we got to be able to make more bourbon. So our distilleries have invested quite a bit of money the past couple of years in their facility production and in their visitor center. The first one there, $100 million by Wild Turkey, and Wild Turkey is owned actually by an Italian company, Grupo Campari. So Grupo Campari, when they bought Wild Turkey several years ago, saw the need for the exported production and such, and so they've invested $100 million at Wild Turkey to build a new distillery, a brand new visitor center, and a brand new bottling line. It is gorgeous there. Absolutely great. We keep bringing the governor out for more ribbon cuttings, but we keep bringing more jobs, and he keeps cutting ribbons. So Maker's Mark added $70 million for a new visitor experience, new distillation capacity, and more warehouses. To build a warehouse is about $2.5 million. There's not a whole lot in the warehouse. It's just a lot of wood, and there's nothing else inside of it pretty much, but it is costly to build these warehouses. So they're popping up all over the state. Jim Beam built a new bottling operation there. They've increased their distribution hub in Frankfurt and visitor center and R&D facility. Brown-Forman expanded their Woodford Reserve distillery. They're added new stills down there. So those of you that love Woodford Reserve, don't worry. There's plenty of more of it coming. They're added expansion. Heaven Hill, downtown, we just talked about Evan Williams Bourbon Experience. They've also expanded warehouse capacity in Nelson County. Michter's, which is one of our newest members, is spending $19 million downtown Louisville for a new visitor experience. Alltech, you guys are familiar with Dr. Pierce Lyons with Alltech in this industry, maybe? Okay, so he's built quite a bit in Lexington, spent a lot of money. He has his own bourbon, Town Branch, downtown Lexington. Diageo has announced a $2.5 million renovation to restore an old distillery here in Louisville. And then Four Roses spent another $2.5 million in Lawrenceburg for a new visitor center. I need to add to Diageo's $2.5 million. They announced on Thursday they're going to spend $115 million in Shelby County for a brand new distillery. That is huge news. So that tops pretty much everybody else on the list. So that's another huge investment we're very excited about. Again, Diageo is owned by an English company, the largest spirits owner. So again, a great FDI. We're loving the foreign direct investment here in the Commonwealth. So tourism, show of hands, who has been to a distillery? Good. Okay. Who has completed the Kentucky Bourbon Trail? Yes. One man. Are you Kentuckian?
I am.
All right. Thank you. That's okay. We'll take it. Thank you. So we're celebrating our 15th year of the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. 15 years ago, there were a couple distilleries that were offering kind of a tour. You'd kind of walk in and say, I'm interested in seeing what you got here. And they'd find someone on the line to show you around for about 5 or 10 minutes. And that was about it. 15 years later, it's grown to be the mammoth that it is. So we're very excited about it, what we've been doing. This map here shows the growth of the distilleries. So in the top left, you'll see the heritage members. So we have two different trails. So we have the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, which is the big guys, and we have the Kentucky Bourbon Trail Craft Tour on the other side. So you'll see all the way down far west Kentucky, Land Between the Lakes. We have two distilleries way down there. We have another distillery up in Maysville, and we just added one last month called New Rift Distillery in Newport, Kentucky, right across the river from Cincinnati. So we are kind of all over the Commonwealth. Alltech just announced they're going to put a new brewery and distillery in Pikeville, which is far east Kentucky. So the map keeps getting larger. So if you haven't done the Kentucky Bourbon Trail yet, be ready to drive. It keeps expanding to all parts of the state. The eight distilleries that are on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail are listed here: Four Roses, Heaven Hill, the Evan Williams, Jim Beam, Maker's Mark, Town Branch, Wild Turkey, and Woodford Reserve. And then in 2012, we started the Kentucky Bourbon Craft Tour. As these craft distilleries started popping up, they wanted to be a part of it. They wanted to be on the big trail, and we decided to make their own trail for themselves. So if you do all of the craft distilleries, you actually get a mint julep cup, which is photographed there. It's a mint julep cup with the Craft Tour logo on it. We figure if you've traveled all that way to do all those distilleries from Land Between the Lakes all the way to Maysville, you deserve something more than a t-shirt. So your mint julep cup it is. And there are eight distilleries on the Craft Tour. They're listed here. The last one I need to add is the New Rift Distillery I talked about in Newport. I need to get their logo. So demographics, talking about who's done the Bourbon Trail. So we had over 500,000 people visit at least one of the Kentucky Bourbon Trail tours last year, which is a 12% increase. We had 61,000 people visit the craft distilleries, which we were shocked by those numbers. It was the first full year that we had done, but 61,000 people traveled to at least one of the craft distilleries, which is pretty huge. Visitors came from all 50 states and more than 50 countries and territories. More than 1 million visitors in the past 2 years and 2.5 million visitors in the past 5 years alone. The passport program, I've touched on it briefly. If you go to all the different distilleries, we'll give you literally a passport, and you get it stamped at each one of the distilleries. At the end of it, you get a free T-shirt. You'd be shocked how many people want that free T-shirt and will drive all over the state to get a free T-shirt. We love it. It's wonderful. We appreciate it. And we'll find people wearing these T-shirts all over the state, and it's kind of hilarious to us because amongst our staff, we'll kind of take photographs of who we see wearing the T-shirts, and we stop them and make awkward conversation. All right, so last year it has increased over 9,000% since 2007 when we started this program. We started the program, we had less than 200 people complete the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. Last year we had 15,000. It has grown significantly. We had some great accolades from National Geographic and CNN International, which we're very excited about. So who is this Kentucky tourist? Our local tourism operators really love this. The CVBs also love this as well. We send out a survey to everybody who's completed the Kentucky Bourbon Trail and ask them who they are and a little bit about them. The average household income is $91,000 and above. 56% are between the key demographic we're looking for, 21 to 54. 63% are men. We're trying to change that a little bit more. 90% came from outside of Kentucky. That's really important to us. So we want those new tourism dollars to come into the state of Kentucky. So 90% came from outside of Kentucky. 43% had three or more in their age group. 63% stayed three or more days. That continues to increase. It used to be only about 50% stayed three or more days, but as the trail keeps getting bigger, people keep staying longer, which we really enjoy when you come and stay in our state for that long. 79% stayed in hotels or bed and breakfasts. Those are new tax dollars. And 77% came just for the Kentucky Bourbon Trail experience. We used to have a lot of travelers that just kind of stumbled upon us. They saw an interstate sign and said, hey, we'll stop over. Or they were driving up and down 75 or 64 and kind of would just wander into it. But now we're getting people that are planning their entire vacations, taking a week-long vacation or taking a long vacation with their spouse and with some of their friends and coming specifically for the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. That's huge. So Fortune Magazine did a huge article about us. And their February and March issue. Did anybody see this? Does anybody get Fortune Magazine? Awesome. Well, Clay Risden is a great, great guy. He's done a lot of different articles and continues to do more articles about bourbon. But he called it the billion-dollar bourbon boom. So he kind of did a deep dive talking about where the history is of Kentucky bourbon, what's the future of Kentucky bourbon, are we on a bubble, are we going to burst, where are we at here? So he did a good deep dive in that one for us. What have we been doing to try to promote and help more Kentucky bourbon? So we relaunched our Bourbon Trail website. So as people were trying to figure out how do they plan their trip, we pretty much redid our website to try to help itineraries, experiences, day planners. The phone calls to our office dropped significantly, and our page views went up. So this website seems to be working pretty well for our visitors. We also created an app because, of course, why would you want to go to a website when you can have it on your phone? So we created a new app for everybody to use. We also have plenty of merchandise. We do plenty of merchandise. If anyone's looking for a good Father's Day gift, we will personalize a barrel head, we'll personalize a flask, we'll personalize a glass, anything like personalized, and you want to give it to somebody as a gift, we got you. It's on our website. We can do it, or just any in general Kentucky Bourbon Trail items. The bottom there, does anybody know what the glasses are sitting on? There we go. It's a stave. So on a stave, it's part of a barrel. It's a piece of a barrel anyways. So we do cool things with staves. Those have shot glasses on them. So in the distilling industry, we are really good at the visitor centers from about 10 a.m. to about 5 p.m. We can entertain the crap out of you at those hours. Once you're done at 5 p.m., you're not on your own. So we realized that several years ago, and so we wanted to work with partners across the state. So what we've done now is to work with different partners, whether it's Mint Julep Tours that will help you plan your trip and actually physically drive you distillery to distillery, or if it's a local lunch spot and nearby a distillery so you can have a good lunch with it, or if it's a dinner partner, or hotels. There's actually Marriott Louisville East, which is a sister hotel. This one has bourbon-themed rooms. They have a bourbon-themed bar. They have a bourbon-themed restaurant. So at the end of the day, if you're not bourboned out, you can come home to your Marriott Louisville East, and they actually, in some of the hotel rooms, have actual bourbon barrels. They had used bourbon barrels, and apparently they got a lot of complaints that it smelled too bourbony in people's rooms. So we're getting them new barrels that don't smell of bourbon all night long. But anyway, so we've really been expanding this, our partners and our sponsors, to try to incorporate more bourbon throughout the day and throughout your entire experience. The cities have also gotten involved. So the visitor centers in Bardstown, Lebanon, and Shepherdsville. Bardstown, of course, is the bourbon capital of the world. Lebanon is where home of Maker's Mark and Limestone Branch Distillery, and Shepherdsville is home of Jim Beam. And then the city of Louisville is also a major partner at the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. Has anybody ever heard of this, the Kentucky Bourbon Chase? Okay, so then obviously no one's ever ran it. So the big it thing now in relay races is to run overnight 200 miles with 12 of your closest buddies in a van. For whatever reason, this is a big thing. They love it. We've been doing it for 5 years now. This will be our sixth year. So you actually literally run distillery to distillery overnight. You start Friday morning at Jim Beam in Claremont, in Claremont. And then you literally run overnight. So you'll go to Heaven Hill, then you'll go to the middle of nowhere in Maker's Mark, then you'll go to a couple of little cities in the middle of the night, then you wake up and go to Four Roses. Why wouldn't you want to run to Four Roses in the sunrise? Then to Wild Turkey, Woodford Reserve, and then you make your way downtown Lexington, pass by Altex Distillery in the morning, in the afternoon, and you're right, finish at Rep Arena in Triangle Park. So it has sold out the last 5 years. They've raised about $700,000. It's been really, really cool. It keeps increasing, and we keep getting a lot of different runners. And again, it's the right demographics that we're looking for. A lot of people love to do this, and it's a ton of fun. I have a lot of friends that come up and do this one. Coming soon, we're working on a Kentucky Bourbon Trail Almanac that highlights a lot of our distilleries and our partners and things. The Kentucky Bourbon Affair, I touched on this at the beginning. So our board was looking for a type of conference for our association. So instead of doing this type of traditional conference, the distilleries want to do a kind of behind-the-scenes, in-depth experience for people. So typically when we do events, the distilleries and Maker's Mark will go to a conference room in New York City, and they'll sample their products to a lot of people. Well, that's wonderful, and we really enjoy doing that. But we wanted to bring those people to the distillery in their backyards and do a behind-the-scenes, in-depth thing. So the first picture you'll see, the water tower, that's actually here in downtown Louisville. That's at Brown-Forman's headquarters, and they had dinner on the roof of Brown-Forman headquarters. Very cool. People in the middle there are bottling their very own Knob Creek by hand. The other one was a dinner with Four Roses. The master distiller, Jim Rutledge at Four Roses, literally poured you a specialty bottle of Four Roses single barrel 2013 vintage and 2014 vintage and talked you through it. The lady down there looks like she's in a lab. She's at Moonshine University making her own cocktail concoction with the help of a lot of the craft distillers. This gentleman in the middle is dipping his own bottle of Maker's Mark on the line at Maker's Mark. And Rob Samuels, what you don't see is Rob Samuels, the chief operating officer, is literally standing behind him, watching him do it. And then Bobby G is the mixologist with Jim Beam. And so Fred Noe, the master distiller at Jim Beam, went and partnered with DIY Man Cave. Has anyone ever seen Man Caves? All right. Man Cave. Man Cave came in and redid his Man Cave, all to be cool Jim Beam. So anyways, it was a cool event we did in the afternoon. You went to Fred Noe's house. About 20 of us had lunch with Fred Noe. Bobby G made up some crazy cocktails, and we hung out in Fred Noe's Man Cave for the afternoon. So we had no idea what to expect. It was amazing. We had a great time. We did it for 5 days. We were celebrating the 50th anniversary of Congress again declaring American Native Spirit. We did various nightcap events. We were trying to bring in that culinary. Again, it's more than just a drink, so we're trying to bring in those nightcap experiences. We did a lot of adventure kind of things. They recreated the story of how Wild Turkey became a name, and so they did skeet shooting. Of course, the original Wild Turkey story is that they went and hunted turkeys. But anyways, they did a control skeet shoot on the property at Wild Turkey with Wild Turkey shotguns. They had them logoed. And Jimmy and Eddie Russell, the master distillers, really took you and skeet shooting on the property, which obviously never happens because the attorneys would never let us do that every day. So in summary, what does this mean for Kentucky? So what does it mean for consumers? Of course, it's great educational opportunities to learn more about the craft, its history, and its future. It's great for tourism. Increased tourism and positive publicity means more visitor dollars and hospitality revenue for local communities. Great for business. These spinoff companies have been built on the surging Kentucky Bourbon Trail. Good for hotels, restaurants, bars, and more. Great for the industries. As visitors continue to flock to Kentucky, it's increased brand awareness and loyalty. So when you go home, you make sure of what are you ordering at the bar, that distillery that you visited. And, of course, great for Kentucky. It keeps the Commonwealth competitive in a global marketplace and helps solidify bourbon as the one true authentic home for bourbon. So that's what we want to talk about. Kentucky is the one true authentic home for bourbon. Anybody else in the state, anybody else in the country can make it, but we are the one true authentic home for bourbon. So in summary, of course, if you choose to enjoy Kentucky bourbon, which I hope you do in the reception next door, please do so responsibly. So, all right, now the fun time of asking questions. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Does bourbon contain grain neutral spirits?
Bourbon itself does not contain GNS. There are some of the craft distillers that are doing some different things with GNS that I believe they're working on. So our craft distillers, as they're making bourbon, it's being put away to age. They're looking for different types of distilled spirits to be making. So they are using some GNS. What bourbon would you like for your question?
My one.
Come on, that's a TV and that's glass. Okay. All right, next.
Yes.
Who's got a mic? Okay, sorry.
Is it a special kind of corn, or is it regular yellow field corn you use?
It depends distillery by distillery. They work very closely with their farmers on that process. A lot of the distilleries have been using the same farm and the same types of corn for decades. Obviously, it's 70% of our product, so it goes into the mash bill, so they want to make sure they have a very, good relationship with that corn grower at the very beginning. I don't know specifically that question, if it's just yellow number two or what they're using. I'm not sure. Is it? Yes. You told me you weren't going to ask technical questions. Yellow number two is way... Sorry. What bourbon would you like?
I like birds, so I'll take the turkey.
All right. There we go. It's part of the condom. Who's up?
Check. Okay, I've got one. I know everybody is wondering this. What is your favorite bourbon?
You already asked me this. It's Kentucky bourbon. You do not get a bottle for that one. All right, over here.
Mm-hmm. So when I've been overseas before, mm-hmm. I've always heard it referred to as American bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
So with more export now, mm-hmm. how are you protecting the Kentucky name in that when outside the U.S. they associate it with America and not with Kentucky?
Kentucky? Read the label. So every time on the label, it always will say Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey on it. So every time we export it.
But if the consumer doesn't care,
mm-hmm.
why do they care if it comes from California or New York or Florida?
Hopefully we make a lot better bourbon than California and Oregon. Okay. I think flavor and branding and a lot of that comes into it. But when, when any of these products up here are branding it, they're not specifically branding or educating that, consumer outside of the United States about what Kentucky is. They probably have... probably never going to travel here, don't know the difference between Kentucky or Tennessee or Oregon or Texas or things. So, but to them, if we can promote America bourbon, I'm okay with that. Okay, what would you like?
Oh.
Okay, this is also a glass one. You're going to need to come. I'm not. I played softball in college. Okay. Oh, yes.
Are there many bourbons that are, because of regulations, not able to sell their product outside of the state of Kentucky? And I guess two-part question then. If there's a bourbon that I should take home,
mm-hmm.
that I can't get anywhere but Kentucky, are you allowed to play favorites and tell me which one?
I can. I'll do that for the city of Lowell. So Evan Williams Bourbon Experience, again, which is right down the street. So they offer a couple of unique, what they call their Heritage Collection bourbons. So in their gift shop, they do have a couple of specialty bourbons that you're not going to be able to find anyplace else. They may be a little bit higher ticket value, but well worth it to check out. And your first question again, we're very regulated by the U.S. government and the TTB, so the Tax and Trade Bureau. So the Tax and Trade Bureau approves every label that goes onto a bottle of spirits. So they are the ones that control what, if it says Kentucky bourbon on it or there's certain criteria to be Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey on it. So they're the ones that are regulating that. Did that answer?
Yes.
Okay, what would you like? It is. It's a very good bottle of Four Roses single barrel. Surprised that lasted so long. Next question. Tom. Mm-hmm.
What happens to all these barrels? You say you only use them once.
We only use them once, and we send them to Scotland. The majority of them we send to Scotland, and they use for their Scotch whiskey, which what makes their Scotch whiskey any good? No. We've used them. That's primarily where they go. A lot of these companies, their parent company owns other products, and so they'll have a contract with that. But we're also working a lot with Alltech. So Alltech has their bourbon barrel ale. So they're actually taking beer and aging it into a bourbon barrel to get some of those flavors out of it. We'll work with some wineries who are looking to get that flavor profile of the. There's actually a lot of bourbon. So the history behind Devil's Cut is pretty much what they've done is gone back in and are extracting more of that liquid that's still left in the barrel. If you actually get a used barrel and it's been straight, emptied recently, if you actually put some water in it, put it in the sun, you'll sweat that bourbon out of it, and you will get a little bit of bourbon left out of it. So. All right, what would you like? The Devil's Cut? Oh, that was not very good. Sorry, Tom. All right, who's with the mic?
Is there an optimum proof to get the right odor and the right taste?
Proof is up to you. I mean, the lowest proof, we have minimums and maximums. So minimum is 80 proof. So a Basil Hayden is going to be right at that 80 proof, so it's a little bit lower. We talk about that for beginners, not as strong of a profile to it. Then there's others of us, when it's been a hard day, you'll do barrel strength. So a barrel strength is much higher, about 120, 130 proof. That gets a little bit much more. Obviously, completely different components of where you're going with flavor profile and the proof. With it, like we said, you can't do anything to enhance the flavor of the color of bourbon. So anything that's 130 proof, you can obviously reduce it down by adding water to get it to a lower proof.
And by putting a little water in does not negate the
taste. It does not. Actually, when we do tastings, we'll typically do, so you'll try some of the Maker's Mark, and then, after you've had a sip or two of the Maker's Mark, we'll actually put and encourage you to put a drop or two of water into it, and it brings out the flavor and the profile to it. So it's not horrible for anyone to put ice or water in their bourbon.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Which would you like? Yes. We have Maker's, Jim Beam White, and American Honey, which is best chilled. That's way too far. There's way too many people in my way.
Too many injuries. Mm-hmm. Since you're a softball player, you'll handle this one fairly well. What makes Kentucky bourbon different than, say, that whiskey that comes from south of Kentucky?
So it's the sour mash that they have. It's the charcoal process. So when they are done aging it and they're dumping it through a charcoal filter. And so, again, that adds the coloring and flavor to it. American Honey or Jim Beam White? Okay. So that's honey-infused bourbon. So it's a different one from Wild Turkey. All right, I'll keep answering questions, but last bottle.
What is the oldest, longest-aged Kentucky bourbon?
No. On the market or ever?
Ever.
I don't know. No. On the market, it's probably around 27. I have a bottle of Parker's Heritage Collection that's 27 years old. But I haven't seen it much longer. The good thing about bourbon, it doesn't age any longer once you actually bottle it. So it's not going to continue to
age.
Is
that the oldest? Does it mean strongest?
Oh, it's pretty strong. It's probably around the 120 mark. It's pretty strong. But again, as you're aging those bourbons, actually, I don't really prefer any bourbon that's been aged longer than 10 years. So as you continue to age that bourbon, it's continued to get more of that wood flavors and those wood components as it continues to age through those four summer seasons. I wish we had four summer seasons here. So you will get more and more wood tones and wood. I think it's too oaky. Once you get to 12 years, the bourbons are way too oaky for me. But some people do prefer them. All right, last one. And I'll stay if anybody. Oh, you have another question? Okay.
Good.
Yep, okay. You're up.
This is a two-part question. Hopkinsville, Kentucky is apparently ground zero for a global solar eclipse in 2017. I was just wondering.
Did Paul Tomaszewski put you up to this?
No. Actually, I'm interested in it myself.
Sorry, we have a craft distiller down there, and every time he calls, he talks about the solar eclipse. Okay. Sorry, go
ahead. Well, I was just wondering.
It's a joke in our office. Keep going.
Are there any distillers that are capturing this opportunity to do something for it? and
M.B. Rowland down in Pembroke, which is in Hopkins County. Yes. He continues to discuss it, and I believe he is. I think he may be working, obviously, with himself or maybe with some other craft distillers as well. But.
And then because of this, do I get any VIP status for giving such a great marketing opportunity?
We can talk later.
Okay.
Do you have another one over here? Go ahead. Hmm? Say that one more time.
Do you have more?
No, I'm out. Yes. That gets very technical, but the answer is yes. There is quality control every time. I do know that pretty much whenever they receive a shipment of grain in, there is someone at the gate that literally does samples and checks whatever they check that's important from a technical perspective to make sure that the grain is good. And they have turned several trucks away. I mean, they won't even let that truck come onto property if it's not the specifications and the quality that they demand at the distilleries. So they'll turn it away and go away. But if it's gotten all of it, you know, if it passes whatever test that they need to at the distilleries, it will move forward and be milled and go on property. But yes.
Do they check the product?
Say that again.
Do they check the product?
The product?
Yeah.
At the end, the corn grower?
The quality, like the
bourbon. Oh, yes. That is a you want that job at the distillery. Quality control. You've been trying. It's really cool to go into the quality control room. I mean, they have so many different samples that are laying out there, and people's palates are so developed. The master distiller has a couple of different people he trusts to help him with the quality control, but yes, quality control is a big component of the bourbon industry because you've got to make sure, as you're aging it, to make sure the bourbon's correct. So it ages at different times and different levels. So what is it ready to go at 6 years? Is it ready to go to 6 years and 6 months? Is it ready to go at 7 years? Depends on the aging process. You got to make sure that the barrel is ready to pull and ready to bottle.
Hi, here.
Where are you going? Okay, yes.
At what proof bourbon can be lighted, burn into fire? Has anybody tried that?
It's all flammable. It is all flammable liquid. We have had, unfortunately, a couple of very bad instances of fires, and it is a liquid. It is a flammable liquid, so at any point it will. So hopefully nobody's had any bad bar tricks of lighting liquid on fire, bourbon on fire. But all right.
Kristen, I'm gonna
good. There's a reception.
We had one question okay. Right here.
And this is a good one for corn growers. How much corn is being used in Kentucky with bourbon?
That's a great question. We are researching that. So we are in the process right now of doing an updated economic impact study. So your friends at the Kentucky Corn Growers Association are really interested in that question, as are legislature, to figure that out. So we're looking into that one. We're trying to do an economic impact study that incorporates the agriculture and what we mean to the state, and that's a very good question. We're also asking, how can we buy more of it? So we do want to increase that corn production, since Kentucky does have a lot of good grain here. We want to figure out what can the corn growers do and what can the distilleries do to continue to marry that and increase that corn level production. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.